Good morning, everyone. My name is Andy Pollock. I'm a member of the congregation. We have the tradition of an open pulpit in this church so that members of the congregation regularly take services. And that's even more the case at the moment because we're between ministers. Gavin Byrne, who is our probationary minister, who's here on a six-month internship, is doing every other week, and then every other week it's a member of the congregation. So everybody is welcome, and particularly people who are visiting us for the first time, you're very welcome, and people on Zoom, all very welcome. Holy and beautiful, the custom which brings us together in the presence of the Most High, to face our ideals, to remember our loved ones in absence, to give thanks, to make confession, to offer forgiveness, to be enlightened, and to be strengthened. Through this quiet hour breathes the worship of ages, the cathedral music of history. Three unseen guests attend, faith, hope, and love. Let all our hearts prepare them place. And the first hymn is hymn number 20, Be Thou My Vision. I'd be grateful if you could pay attention to the words of this hymn and the next hymn, because the address is going to be about those two hymns. So the first hymn is Be Thou My Vision. Tony Roach was going to do the first reading, but I understand he's not going to make it, so Gavin is going to step in.
A Morning Offering by John O'Donohue. I bless the night that nourished my heart to set the ghosts of longing free into the flow and figure of dream that went to harvest from the dark, bread for the hunger no one sees. All that is eternal in me welcomes the wonder of this day, the field of brightness it creates, offering time for each thing to arise and illuminate. I place on the altar of dawn the quiet loyalty of breath, the tent of thought where I shelter, waves of desire I am sure to, and all beauty drawn to the eye. May my mind come alive today to the invisible geography that invites me to new frontiers, to break the dead shell of yesterdays, to risk being disturbed and changed. May I have the courage today to live the life that I would love, to postpone my dream no longer, but do at last what I came here for, and waste my heart on fear no more.
I don't see any children in the congregation, so I'm going to read the children's story from up here. I'm a great believer in poetry. I love poetry. And this is a wonderful poem on a very familiar theme. It's Little Red Riding Hood and the Wolf by Roald Dahl. As soon as Wolf began to feel that he would like a decent meal, he went and knocked on Grandma's door. When Grandma opened it, she saw the sharp white teeth, the horrid grin. And Wolfie said, "May I come in?" Poor Grandmama was terrified. "He's going to eat me up," she cried. And she was absolutely right. He ate her up in one big bite. But Grandmama was small and tough, and Wolfie wailed, "That's not enough. I haven't yet begun to feel that I have had a decent meal." He ran around the kitchen yelping, "I've got to have a second helping." Then added with a frightful leer, I'm therefore going to wait right here till little Miss Red Riding Hood comes home from walking in the wood." He quickly put on Grandma's clothes. Of course, he hadn't eaten those. He dressed himself in coat and hat. He put on shoes, and after that, he even brushed and curled his hair, then sat himself in Grandma's chair. In came the little girl in red. She stopped, she stared, And then she said, "What great big ears you have, Grandma." "All the better to hear you with," the wolf replied. "What great big eyes you have, Grandma," said Little Red Riding Hood. "All the better to see you with," the wolf replied. He sat there watching her and smiled. He thought, "I'm going to eat this child. Compared with her old grandmama, she's going to taste like caviar." Then Little Red Riding Hood said, "But Grandma, what a lovely big furry coat you have on." "That's wrong," cried the wolf. "Have you forgot to tell me what big teeth I've got?" "Well, no matter what you say, I'm going to eat you anyway." The small girl smiles. One eyelid flickers. She whips a pistol from her knickers. She aims it at the creature's head, and bang, 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 she shoots him dead. A few weeks later, in the wood, I came across Miss Riding Hood. But what a change. No coat of red, no silly hood upon her head. She said, "Hello, and do please note my lovely furry wolfskin coat." It's a wonderful poem. Very, very fond of that poem. Okay, hymn 86, Blessed Spirit of My Life. Most of you will have heard Jennifer Buller's brilliant service last week about Joni Mitchell. There was only one slightly odd note I didn't particularly like. I thought it was absolutely brilliant service. But I didn't like the way that the Second Coming was read to the background of banging, crashing music, because I think that took away from the power of Yeats's words. So for my reading this week, I'm going to read the Second Coming again with no musical accompaniment. "Turning and turning in the widening jar, the falcon cannot hear the falconer. Things fall apart, the center cannot hold, mere anarchy is loosed upon the world. The blood-dimmed tide is loosed, and everywhere the ceremony of innocence is drowned. The best lack all conviction, while the worst are full of passionate intensity. Surely some revelation is at hand. Surely the Second Coming is at hand. The Second Coming. Hardly are those words out when a vast image out of Spiritus Mundi troubles my sight. Somewhere in the sands of the desert, a shape with lion body and the head of man, a gaze blank and pitiless as the sun, is moving its slow thighs while all about it reel shadows of the indignant desert birds. The darkness drops again, but now I know that 20 centuries of stony sleep were vexed to nightmare by a rocking cradle, and what rough beast, its hour come round at last, slouches towards Bethlehem to be born." Written in 1921. Very prophetic. Okay, I'm going to read two prayers. The first one is an interpretation of the prayer of Jesus that Maud Robinson read to us a few months ago. And the second is the Lord's Prayer itself. And this will be followed by silence for personal prayer and meditation. And Kaylee will end that with some music. So this is a version, an interpretation of the prayer of Jesus. "Mystery of life, source of love and beauty, we stand in awe in the presence of the universe. We celebrate the joy of possibility. May we move our world closer to the dream of equity and justice. Though often distracted by material concerns, may we also plumb the depths of the spirit. May the great gifts of the earth sustain us. May the universe forgive our attachment to ego, serving self rather than the greater good. May we in equal measure be forgiving. May we have the strength to dispel the hopelessness which could engulf us as we work against injustice in our broken world. The strength of the universe is all about us. it abounds with power and glory beyond our greatest imaginings. Amen. And now the prayer that Jesus taught us. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the power and the glory forever and ever. Amen. We are living in difficult times. The United States is moving towards becoming a fascist state, with the public service, universities, the media, and the judiciary coming under huge pressure to conform to the far-right, anti-liberal agenda of Donald Trump and his acolytes. Copycat versions of Trump are on the rise in most European democracies. The armies of the warmongers Vladimir Putin and Benjamin Netanyahu are murdering innocent civilians in vicious and genocidal wars in Ukraine and Gaza. The greatest challenge of our times, the threat of climate change and global warming to our planet, is fast slipping off the agenda. I am a classic late 20th century left of center liberal European. I believe in a strong social democratic state as a corrective to the uncontrolled excesses of international capitalism. I believe in the crucial role of trade unions in fighting for just wages and decent conditions for workers and employees in the face of that powerful capitalism. I believe in the welfare state as a vital means of ensuring that the health, education, and well-being of the most vulnerable people in society are cared for. I believe as a wealthy nation, we have a duty to allow in a reasonable number of people fleeing war, persecution, hunger, and poverty in less peaceful and poorer parts of the world. I believe in the European Union as a proven guarantor of peace and prosperity in Europe over the past 80 years. When it comes to morality and religion, I believe passionately in the words of our vision statement at the end of our hymn book, that love of our fellow human beings is the doctrine we should live by. The quest for truth and service to others are our sacraments, that we should learn to dwell together in peace and seek knowledge in freedom, quote, to the end that all souls shall grow in harmony with the divine, whatever that divine is, whether if even she or he exists. As a political liberal and a rational, open-minded Unitarian, I find what is happening in the world today, frankly, terrifying. And as I contemplate the state of our world at my relatively advanced age, I find that I'm thinking more and more about religion, about Christianity in its broad sense, and about Unitarianism as the brand of liberal Christianity I feel most at home with, and what these faiths have to say to our contemporary predicament. The novelist Kevin Power wrote in last weekend's Irish Times about Nietzsche's statement 140 years ago that, quote, belief in the Christian God has become unbelievable, close quotes, or more pithily, quote, God is dead. Power asks, quote, without God, whither meaning, whither consolation and community, whither the significance of the transient individual life? In the third decade of the 21st century, the age of climate change and of the bitter end of the neoliberal experiment, this crisis feels freshly acute. Our sense of the future has collapsed. At such moments, secularism's failure to supply people's lives with positive meaning becomes painfully visible. It is not surprising that at a time like this, people should turn to older sources of meaning. He quotes the celebrated writer on religion, Karen Armstrong, in her book, A History of God, pointing out that it is not secularism, but religious faith that is natural to human beings. She writes, quote, men and women started to worship gods as soon as they became recognizably human. She points out that, quote, our current secularism is an entirely new experiment, unprecedented in human history. She adds dryly, we have yet to see how it will work. Which brings me to St. Patrick and the hymn writer from Ohio. I first got the idea for this address from two hymns we sang around a month ago and again just now. The first, Be Thou My Vision, is often thought of as St. Patrick's hymn, or at least one that is inspired by his teaching. It is one of my favorite hymns and one I once sung at my funeral. Patrick's teaching is in total contradiction to everything that most modern people believe. That God is the absolute power in the world. Quote, I ever with thee and thou with me, God, thou my soul's shelter, thou my high tower, raise thou me heavenward, O power of my power. And the final lines, thou and thou only, first in my heart, sovereign of heaven, my treasure thou art. The story of St. Patrick is well known, although the sources of it are scanty. How he was raised in a prosperous Roman family in Britain, was seized as a very young man by Irish raiders, and spent 8 years as a slave, tending sheep and doing other slavish work, probably somewhere on the west coast, perhaps in Mayo. How during this hard and lonely time, he came to believe in the Christian God, saying 100 prayers every morning and 100 at night, so that the Irish took to calling him Holy Boy. How he made a difficult and dangerous escape and arrived back with his family in Britain, transformed from a spoiled teenager into a man who had been through a profound psychological and spiritual transformation, and how he had two dreams in which voices urged him to return to Ireland, then considered, in his own words, the very edge of the inhabited world to convert the pagan Irish to Christianity. Most of what we know about Patrick comes from two letters. One, an angry missive to a group of Roman soldiers who had murdered and kidnapped some of his newly baptized converts. And the second, near the end of his life, entitled Confession, which explains clearly and precisely his total subjection to God's will. Quote, whatever happens to me, good or evil, I must accept it and give thanks to God. He has taught me to trust in him without any limits. God heard my prayers so that I, foolish though I am, might dare to undertake such a holy and wonderful mission in these last days, that I, in my own way, might be like those God said would come to preach and be witness to the good news to all non-believers before the end of the world. Because the 5th century, with the decline and fall of the Roman Empire, was also a time of turmoil and widespread belief that the world would soon end with the second coming of Christ. Patrick went on, quote, every day I keep expecting to be murdered, assaulted, sold back into slavery, or some such thing. But I'm not afraid because I know heaven waits for me. I throw myself on the mercy of God, who is in charge of everything. As the prophet says, turn your thoughts to God and he will take care of you. He doesn't mind if his, quote, body is torn apart piece by piece by dogs or wild animals, or that I serve as a meal for the birds of the air. I know that if that were to happen, I would gain my soul along with a new body. On that day, we will undoubtedly rise again like the sun in the morning, like the sun, Jesus Christ, our Redeemer. Patrick is a heroic figure, prepared as hundreds of martyrs before and after him to die for his Christian faith. But his magnificent muscular Christianity and his huge, unshakable confidence in a life after death in God and Christ's presence sounds strange and outdated to many modern ears, including mine, although part of me wishes I had a bit of it. Which is why I turn to my second hymn, number 86, Blessed Spirit of My Life, which is by a Unitarian hymn writer and director of church music from Cincinnati, Ohio, Shelley Jackson Denham, who died in 2013. She wrote 5 hymns that are in our Singing the Living Tradition hymn book. This is a classic late 20th century Unitarian hymn whose sentiments strike an answering chord in me, as I'm sure they will in many people in this church. Quote, Blessed Spirit of my life, give me strength through stress and strife. Help me live with dignity. Let me know serenity. Fill me with a vision. Clear my mind of fear and confusion. When my thoughts flow restlessly, let peace find a home in me. The second verse ends, help me live my wordless creed as I comfort those in need. Fill me with compassion. Be the source of my intuition. Then when life is done for me, let love be my legacy. The nearest this hymn comes to mentioning God is Spirit of Great Mystery, and to heaven, when life is done for me, let love be my legacy. A mainstream Christian critic might say the vision in this hymn is vague and self-serving. The Christian God sounds like a pantheistic American Indian deity, and heaven is merely the comfort family members and friends left behind after a person's death will feel having been close to a good and loving person. While recognizing those criticisms, for better or worse, I am far more in tune with Shelley Jackson Denham's vague spiritualism than I am with St. Patrick's absolute belief in God. Whether my vague Unitarian beliefs are enough to fortify me through war and suffering and illness and death, as his Christian beliefs did triumphantly for him, is another matter. When I first went up to Armagh to work in 1999, I was asked to address sixth formers in a local Catholic grammar school. They knew of my previous existence as a religious affairs correspondent of the Irish Times, about my Unitarian beliefs, to address them about my Unitarian beliefs. At the end, a girl whose mother had just died asked if Unitarianism would be helpful to somebody in her sorrowful position. I have to say, I had no answer for her. Similarly, when I was at the bedside of my 97-year-old aunt, who I was particularly close to, again in Armagh, I was conscious that her very strong Christianity and certainty that she was going to a better place made her very calm and accepting as the end approached. I have a vivid memory of helping her drink a cup of tea and her humorously upbraiding me for holding the cup the wrong way 4 hours before she died. Would I have had that calm spirit of acceptance? I doubt it. I'm certain I'm not made in the mold of a muscular 55th century Christian saint. I'm a modern man, full of searching and self-questioning and self-doubt. To take a simple example, the biographical note about Shelley Jackson Denham on the internet says she died in August 2013, 3 months after her husband died, quote, very suddenly. I don't know how I would cope if my beloved wife died very suddenly, as Shelley Jackson Denham's husband did. I wonder if her Unitarian faith gave her the same strength and consolation during that sad and lonely 3 months that my Aunt Maud had in Armagh as she approached death. There is another hymn by Shelley Jackson Denham in our hymn book, which I rather like, number 194, Faith is a Forest. I came across this reading by her on the internet, which echoes the sentiments in this hymn. Quote, faith is a forest in which doubts play and hide. Here may we welcome the experience of walking with our doubts in an interplay of shadow and light. We enter that forest and listen for the still, small voice deep inside. Here may we welcome those quiet moments of reflection, trusting what wisdom we find. Here, walking in that forest together, we interweave threads of doubt and belief, wonder and inquiry, that we may lace our lives with compassion, strengthen our commitment, and find the courage to bear witness to matters of worth. Here we gather collective guidance that we might go out into each tender day, allowing our beliefs and our doubts to speak through us in all we do and say. This walk in the forest is very comforting and pantheistic and Unitarian. It's like the poem from that wonderful American poet, Mary Oliver, The Summer Day, which is sometimes cited as American's favorite poem. This ends, quote, I don't know exactly what a prayer is. I do know how to pay attention, how to fall down into the grass, how to kneel down in the grass, how to be idle and blessed, how to stroll through the fields, which is what I have been doing all day. Tell me, what else should I have done? Doesn't everything die at last and too soon? Tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life? But is this poetry and pantheism enough when life turns hard, when death awaits? I simply don't know. Amen. Okay, can we have the next hymn now, which is 121? are some notices. Thank you to all who contributed to today's service, who prepared the church, played the music. Thank you particularly to Kaylee for the lovely music, welcomed us, read for us, and the coffee and tea makers who are getting the hall ready downstairs. Please join us for tea and coffee downstairs and chat, particularly if you're a visitor or you're not a regular. Please come and meet us and chat to us downstairs. Our open pulpit remains open, and we ask people to volunteer to lead services over the coming months. The next available slot is the 17th of August. Please speak to Gavin. The June edition of our magazine, Auskult, is in the lobby there. Please take one, and no charge. Sundays at 2 p.m. is a new initiative. Sundays at 2 p.m. is a new initiative here in the church. It is led by the Classical Musicians Network, who meet here in the church, and it's organized by Shari. The second hour-long concert is on Sunday, the 29th of June at 2 p.m. I believe there's a notice downstairs in the lobby that tells you what music they'll be playing. Tickets are free, but any donation you wish to make will go towards our restoration fund. For more information, please talk to Shari. Last week's concert raised €252 for the church restoration fund. Pam leads our weekly service of reflection in the church every Wednesday from 1:05 p.m. to 1:35 p.m. These sessions can also be accessed live on our webcam. In June, the book club is reading Tell Me Everything by Elizabeth Strout. The book club's next meeting is on Wednesday, the 25th of June at 7:30 in the vestry. Please talk to Alison for details. So our final hymn is the wonderful Beethoven's wonderful Ode to Joy, the European Anthem, number 29. Courage of the early morning's dawning, and the strength of the eternal hills, and the peace of the evening's ending, and the love of God be in our hearts. Mm-hmm.